I think I would define a rebel woman as someone who defies social norms, so maybe is the first to do something.
To me, a rebel woman is someone who goes against the grain, but more specifically, it's that she sees the path she wants to take and takes it.
I think a rebel woman challenges the expectations of a predominantly masculine world.
How do you define a rebel woman? Is it to be awarded over 150 caps for England Lionesses and being on the winning squad for the Euros 2022?
And now Jill Scott, and there we have it. England are on the way.
Is it to be a multi-Brit award-winning singer? Is it to be the chief news correspondent for the BBC, being one of the first women to report from war zones around the world?
After hours of shooting and facing a line of troops, the crowd is still here.
Or is it to be heroic in the efforts of saving the lives of dozens of Jewish people during the Holocaust?
You two Cook sisters went in there time and again and brought people out because your hearts were touched. Otherwise, they died.
The Rebel Women of Sunderland is a project that shines a light on the lives of remarkable women from Sunderland who have done remarkable things. It was inspired by the popular children's book, Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. Nominations for Rebel Women of Sunderland were crowdsourced through social media with over 100 nominations of inspirational women of the city. Every year on International Women's Day, more Rebel Women are unveiled. And this year, we're unveiling Rebel Women of Sunderland, the podcast. Across the first series, you're going to hear from rebel women within the worlds of writing, music, and sport. So let's go. Sunderland has been a hub of writing inspiration over the years, with many writers hailing from our city.
My name is Jessica Andrews.
I'm Adrienne Hunter Humberstone.
I'm Amanda Revel Walton, and I'm also known as Nancy Revel.
My name's Glenda Young.
I'm Helen Wilgore.
I'm Mary Talbot.
I'd always wanted to write about Sunderland.
Nancy Revel is the best-selling author of the Shipyard Girl series.
So that was sort of my starting point. I wanted to base this saga series in Sunderland. So I started to look at women during the World War II period, and I started to look for inspirational women that hadn't really been, you know, there wasn't much known about. And it was an incredible sort of discovery. I found this one article which sort of got me immediately excited and kind of outraged at the same time. And I read it, and it was about these women, ordinary women, who had worked in the shipyards during World War II, and they'd had to work in the shipyards because the men had gone off to war, so the shipyards needed workers, didn't matter what gender, they needed workers to build ships, because obviously the ships were needed for transportation. What got me very, very excited, and I felt like I just discovered this golden nugget of an idea, was just an archived, I know it must have been a 200-word article on these women. And that was the trigger point for me. I was just like, wow, there's these ordinary women that were very inspirational.
Changes that took place for women during the World Wars was also influential for Glenda Young.
The books that I write are all set at the end of the First World War. For society itself, it was a time of a fantastic change, the likes of which women especially had never seen before. So I thought that was an ideal time to set some really good drama. So it's a real matriarchal society that I'm writing about. And a lot of that came from when I was doing the research. I came across a book from Sunderland Antiquarian Society that had a list of all of the pubs in Ryep. And they list every single pub that the village has ever had with all of the landlords and landladies who've ever ran them. And I noticed straight away that during and after World War One and World War Two, the names above the doors on most of the pubs in Ryep were women's names. And I thought, these women who were running the pubs could not be delicate little flowers. They had to be able to handle drunken miners, drunken farmers, be able to run their pubs with a rod of steel. And that's where really the inspiration for the books came from.
I'm really interested in just kind of like ordinary lives.
Jessica Andrews is the award-winning author of Saltwater and Milk Teeth. She also writes the Rebel Women stories.
I think there's these nice layers of things where we've got these people who did things that we would call historic, and they made changes to things and they were inspiring and brave. But I guess I'm also interested in just like the ordinariness of life and how people who maybe aren't necessarily making history in the way that we would expect it are also in their way making their own histories and kind of contributing to what the region is and to kind of what life is like here.
It's common for authors from Sunderland to use the city as their source of inspiration. Glenda Young.
Once I got an agent, she told me that my novels would need a very strong sense of place. And I knew there was only one place I could write about with conviction, and that was Sunderland. But because I'd written books in the past about a soap opera, I knew then that the best thing to do would be to focus on a small part of Sunderland and set the books there. And that's when I came up with the idea of setting them in Ryup, which is really strange because growing up there, you think, you know, I thought I knew the place. But it was only when I started researching what it was like over 100 years ago living in the village that I realised how much I didn't know. So, and the research has turned out to be my favourite part of the whole process.
Another writer who has been influenced by the city is PhD researcher and University of Sunderland academic tutor Adrienne Hunter-Humberstone.
I'm writing about the Victoria Hall disaster, which, if people don't know about it, is a terrible disaster in Sunderland in 1883 on a very hot June day when about 2,000 children were in a big music hall in Sunderland, and a magician on stage promised them free toys when they were leaving. So unfortunately, 182 children, possibly 183, died in the crush that ensued when kids fell down the stairs and got crushed behind a door. My book is a novel, and it imagines what might have happened if a girl from one of the wealthier houses, who probably wouldn't have been at this event, met a little boy from the poorer end of town, and he said, "Away, there's a show on, come down." And they might have got embroiled in this together. And then what might have happened to them when they were grown up? So there's a, you know, a leap ahead to 1900. And I've included real figures as well. There's a wonderful girl who really was a rebel woman of Sunderland. She was only 12 and she was at the disaster. She was a little girl on crutches. She was playing on the landing when all the children started to pile down the stairs, and she stopped herself and her friend being crushed by jamming the crutches across the corner, and they were found alive when all of the poor children were pulled out. She was called Georgina Cole. But at 12 years old, this little girl stood up in front of two inquests and talked to all of the dignitaries of the town about what had happened to her. And I found in later life that she became a bookbinder, so she had a profession. She got married when she was 44, which was extraordinary, you know, in those days for a person in her position to get married at all. And she lived until 1953. And I think she is a real rebel woman of Sunderland, such spirit and character. And it's just great to honour people who, you know, are perhaps forgotten. There's no records, you know, it's not Anne Boleyn. She's just a little girl from Sunderland who did a marvellous thing. So it's great to honour her and people like her.
We've heard about writers drawn upon historic Sunderland for inspiration in their writing, but what about the more recent history of their upbringings in the city? Jessica Andrews.
My experience of growing up as a young woman in Sunderland in the late 90s, early noughties, was very much, well, I guess first of all, I feel like the way that the region is kind of stereotypically, historically represented, right, are through these identity markers, like the shipyards, the mines, the loss of industry, like in the wake of Margaret Thatcher, football, beaches, Lindisfarne. To me, they're all kind of the things that come into my head when I think of the Northeast. And I think all of those things are real and true, and they are authentic to the region. But I suppose I was growing up during a time when the identity of the city was really changing. We had the closure of the mines, the closure of the shipyards. It was kind of the beginning of new labour, and the region, which had kind of prided itself on all of this heavy industry, I suppose it was sort of in flux in a way, or looking for a new identity. And I think when I was growing up as a young woman during that time, I didn't necessarily feel a connection to those things, even though they're very much part of like my history and my family and my lineage and all of those kinds of things. And my Sunderland of that time, it was very much a patchwork of things which are very characteristic to the 90s. So like particular Oasis albums, or this kind of like checky shirt that my dad used to wear when he was out on his motorbike. But it was also, I went to school in Washington, so it was kind of like this sort of endless fields around the motorway, and walking down the lines, the old colliery lines, with my friends kind of on rainy Saturday afternoons. It was also anchored a lot around my mum. So kind of, you know, watching her get ready to go out to the pub on a Saturday afternoon and doing her fake tan and putting her makeup on. And I don't know, the sparkly dresses that she used to wear. And this feeling of, I guess, a kind of working class femininity that feels specific to the Northeast in some way, that I think is often lacking from those traditional portrayals of the regional identity.
Glenda Young.
Growing up in Sunderland, in a working class village, and I grew up on a council estate, growing up in the 1970s, I was a voracious reader, and I still am. And I thought, I want to be a writer. This is all I ever want to do. But there was just no opportunities. I mean, I might as well have told my parents that I wanted to be an astronaut, because then they could have said, well, go to the library and get a book out about space travel and learn something. But there was just nothing and no opportunities at all to be a writer. So I was considered someone at school who was good at English, who used to write stories, and then I'd just, you know, put them away at the back of my knicker drawer and forget all about them. So it just seemed like an impossible thing to even consider being a writer.
Thankfully, there are now more opportunities for aspiring writers in the city.
Welcome to King Ink!
King Ink is the monthly spoken word and poetry night held at Pop Rex in Sunderland and is hosted by Helen Wilgore.
I found King Ink years after it started. It was started by two fellas called Patrick and Brian. And by the time I got there, it was Patrick Shannon who was running it. And I just found a really great community. And after COVID, we wanted to relaunch King Ink. And sadly, Patrick passed away. So we wanted to keep the group going. So we relaunched it in the February of 2021. In the new Pop Rex, and the group's just grown over the last couple of years. So now King Ink is a newly formed CIC that provides a home for Sunderland's hidden poets. When it comes to women, our aim, in so far as we have one, is to provide a platform where all our stories are valued equally, irrespective of the storyteller's place on the gender spectrum. But I think that when people try to talk about the stories of Sunderland people, the heavy industries of the past result in many of those stories coming from male voices, the shipyards, the pits, and until recently, the football. I've written about that myself. And these are important stories, but I think Sunderland is more than that, and providing a platform for women to tell their stories and to write and to express themselves is something that King Ink has done for years and years.
From a weekend bag on Fur Journey to a repository for many, every possible scenario. Carefully, I pick all the vital signs off the floor and put everything back in the bag.
King Ink's kind of like a date night with a difference. It's a place where anybody can come along for free and they can just watch and listen. But what tends to happen is when they watch and listen, they want to do it themselves, and they'll go away and write something and then trembling read it out at the night. And that was how it was with Karima. I remember the first time Karima came to King Ink, And she came along and we chatted with her and she came and sat with us. And then the next month she came back and she'd written her first poem.
Well, since I was young, I've always liked writing poetry, but just never got round to actually doing anything because I brought up a family. My name is Karima and I'm part of the King Inc in Sunderland. I'm just putting myself first and actually getting my writing down, and I found out about King Inc, so I decided to go along last year, really enjoyed it, and it's just made me so much more confident now to put my lyrics down and to be accepted, I don't know if that's the right word, as part of that group, and it's been very, very welcoming and I've learned a lot with it.
Navigator in the star-crossed skies, with galaxies and nebulas in your eyes, charting through the unknown seas with a steadfast sense of ease. The sun and moon smile as you stay with them a while. Your compass points to the way home, no matter how far you roam.
Kinging for me, from a personal point of view, has definitely helped my mental health. Hi, I'm Leanne Maltas, and how I got introduced into King Inc was via James, because when I was in lockdown, I started to distract myself by writing again, and then discovering that I could join a poetry group, I was a bit nervous like to read poems publicly because I've always been so private. However, it was a safe space to do so could do that. But for me, it's really helped like my mental health. It's gave us a sense of calm and a sense of like clarity, and then also it's made us feel like I can pursue something creative publicly.
I love that King Inc's evolved into such a diverse community. Thinking about the Rebel Women and the influences that they've had on King Inc, I know Catherine Robertson has been commissioned to do stuff for Rebel Women, and also it was Catherine who designed all of our artwork for King Inc. Jessica Andrews, who has been an inspiration to a lot of the next generation of women writers from the city, she came to Sunderland as part of her book launch, and we hosted her here at Pop Rex. That was like a collaboration between a few of the community groups, so it was great to host somebody like Jess, who's become such a story of success for female writers in this generation.
When I was approached to write the Rebel Women stories, it felt really exciting to me. I guess because I think Saltwater had maybe been out for a little while, not that long. And so I was very much thinking and speaking all of the time about like, what does it mean to be from the Northeast? What does it mean to be a young woman from the Northeast at this particular period in time? Like, what is the identity of the region? What does the region mean to me? Do I belong there? Like all of these complex questions. So to be asked to do the project was really exciting because it was like, here's like a new and different way of looking at the region. And also I learned so much about the Northeast through doing the project as well, which was really exciting for kind of my relationship with Sunderland and sort of my view of the history and the kinds of things that I thought had or hadn't happened there.
It's amazing to hear that groups like King Inc build women's confidence in creative writing. We've come a long way, as Adrienne Hunter-Humberstone reflects on.
I think female writing obviously has a, you know, it has a long and there's a very varied history, really, because obviously we think about the Brontes, we think about Jane Austen, you know, remarkable women to have been published in their time. I think it's always been pushing at a closed door for a while. You know, the Brontes had to pretend to be men to get published initially. So I think, you know, I'm hoping that women these days have a much easier ride into creative writing. Certainly, I think women often feel they need to write in secret. I've talked to a few people recently who are very good writers who have written since childhood but never showed it to anyone. So I think the more women's confidence grows, the more they feel they can share, and that's got to be very, very good progress.
But how do we keep making this progress?
I think it's really important for universities to recognise the importance of writing and teach people how to do it, because it doesn't matter what you do. If you can write well, you will do better at what you do. You always have to present things in reports. You have to do presentations. You have to talk to people. Doesn't matter what field you're in, whether it's science or technology, you still have to write. And those basic writing skills are incredibly important. And I also think as well, it's important for people to explore their writing and learn how to write things that are longer, in more depth, because it connects the writing with your thinking, and I'm sure it stimulates a part of your brain to think more deeply and come up with something that's really very useful to you and to other people.
Rebel Women, I think, is showcasing the stories that have been missed out of our story. And I mentioned earlier about when people are asked about what do you think of when you think of Sunderland's heritage? Probably the first word that would come out of a lot of mouths would be the shipyards, the Machams, the pits. The football is such a huge part of the beating heart of Sunderland. And I think historically, women have found that their voices are missed out of those stories. So Rebel Women's doing something to redress that balance, and it's highlighting, it's spotlighting the women whose stories haven't been a part of that narrative previously. And that will bring more women into the fore now. So moving forward, women feel empowered to speak and to share their stories on an equal footing with any gender.
It's getting the word out about women, some of perhaps that we did know about, but I've learned so much about women that I had no idea about. And then it encourages you to find out more about them, but also to notice them when you're in the museum or the Winter Garden, or you see something online, you think, oh, of course, that's her, and that's from the Rebel Women. So you see the artwork around it all as well, and all the people involved. Hugely important.
A project like this, I feel like it really contributes to this wider conversation that's happening about what our identity is, or what the identity of the region is, and how we find a way to represent who we are now, or what we're moving to now. Because it feels like, yeah, although our lineage is really important, it seems like we need something else. And I definitely think that the Rebel Women is part of that. It's kind of, it's not rewriting history, it's like embellishing, adding to, like filling out history to include these stories that were happening the whole time, but that we just didn't know about and were kind of slipped from the narrative. So it's really exciting to feel an awareness of that growing.
I think it's important because it makes the connection between what women are doing now, what they have done in the past, and what they've been allowed to do in the past. And it makes everyone think about what next. Looking to the future, you know, how are things going to progress with women? Obviously, women these days have much more power in so many different forums, and that includes confidence, I think, as well. Confidence, education, prospects. It's wonderful, you know, to have seen the change even in my lifetime, you know, that people feel that there is so much more possible for women as well as men. And I think that's excellent. And I think the Rebel Women honours women who didn't have it so good, who really struggled and pushed against things and have helped make the change that's making today happen.
Every year, the Rebel Women Project highlights more women who have done brilliant things that have links to our region. This year, the project is unveiling a brand new Rebel Woman to the cohort, Dr. Mary Talbot.
I think it's really hilarious, actually. Oh, well, perhaps I am a rebel woman, but certainly I like to write about rebel women, so maybe that's enough.
Mary Talbot is a writer of graphic novels and was a university lecturer at the University of Sunderland for 10 years.
As soon as I could write, from the moment I picked up a pencil as a child, I was a writer. I knew I was a writer. I used to write stories as soon as I could string words together on the page. Nobody ever read them, but I knew that they were something that I wanted to produce. So yes, I've always wanted to be a writer. It's a kind of identity, I guess, that's important to me.
Mary's just such a great voice when it comes to writing and creativity. And through her work at the university, like, Mary inspired me. I was on her degree programme, and Mary has just such a warm and welcoming way of inviting people to create, that you know, I can stand as testimony to the impact of that.
When I retired, which I did quite some years ago, 15 years ago now, Brian, my husband, Brian Talbot, he asked me whether I would like to write a graphic novel script, the idea being that he would illustrate it, which I thought was a fantastic idea. Now, I had time on my hands. I knew I wanted to carry on writing, but I hadn't really decided what. And he had this brilliant idea that we would do something together. And that something together turned out to be Daughter of Her Father's Eyes, which is partly autobiographical and partly a biography of the daughter of James Joyce, and was about growing up as a girl in different parts of the 20th century. I mean, I grew up in the 1950s and 60s, and I was sort of making observations about what it was like in school, you know, the shock of going from in a house with four older brothers, where I didn't really know what there was any such thing as gender. We were all just people, you know, and then going to school and finding out that suddenly boys were horrible. And there was strict segregation going on in the classroom and in the playground. There were definite ideas about what girls should and shouldn't do, you know. I was exploring things like that. And amazingly enough, it's been the only British graphic novel to win a major literary award. And it was the Costa Biography Prize, which it won in 2013.
Rebel Women has uncovered women of history, told the stories of the great, and highlighted some remarkable women who come out of the region. But what are the hopes for future Rebel Women?
It really is about not being frightened to step out of the norm. Don't be frightened what people might say to you. If you believe in something, go for it. You know, have the confidence, even if it's false confidence, to just go for it. When you're young, life seems quite sort of endless. It's not, you know. So strike while the iron's hot. Go for it. Don't delay. Don't let other people put you off. Don't be demeaned. And look at what you want to do, what inspires you. And just don't be held back by anything.
I think it'll continue to evolve. I hope it, you know, remains the inclusive thing that it is and the thought-provoking project that it is, really. You know, I hope people keep turning it over in their minds and thinking, I think this is where it could go next, because, you know, there's plenty of rebel women out there. Some of them don't even know they're rebel women. I mean, I've met some among my students at the university here, and if they can recognise that in themselves, it gives you such a boost, such a push forward and a confidence to go on and do everything that you can do.
I really hope that this project particularly inspires young people in the region and kind of shows them that there are people from the Northeast who've done world-changing things that maybe they didn't know about before. It's that thing of sometimes you have to see a life represented, whether it's like in a book or in a film or through someone you know or through the Rebel Women Project, before you can even imagine it for yourself. So yeah, I guess I hope that the project just continues to contribute to different stories and different representations, and like we kind of continue to think about the positive effect that can have on the lives of young people, but also older people too.
For us to be able to support the young ones coming up, the ones that, every generation, but especially the young ones, to say, you've got a good future. If you're wanting to do this, do it. Just give them that power and say, you have the chance.
Well, I'd like to see a whole new generation keep unearthing those gems like Ida and Louise Cook, so we can connect with our history and our past. And let's hope that helps inspire a whole new generation of girls and women to come through. I'm excited to see what happens next.
Rebel Women of Sunderland, the podcast, is a University of Sunderland and We Make Culture production. Produced by Lottie Steele and Grace McDonough. Music by the Rebel Women students at the Northern Academy of Music Education. And presented by me, Bobby Bunker. For more information about the project, head to the link in the show notes.